Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Now, I have a very special guest with me. And before I introduce her, I'm just going to make a few announcements. Two weeks ago, we had our Houston Healing Weekend, which was really wonderful. I can't say enough about it and how many wonderful women were there, how many of them I had a chance to meet, how many of them I really miss now that I'm away from them. And that's the wonderful thing about the Healing Weekends, is that you really find support from other women who can understand exactly what you're going through before you even say a word. So our next Healing Weekend is going to be in mid to late September. I don't have the exact date yet, but it will be mid to late September. And it's going to be in Southern California. And I'm really excited about that because we have some wonderful California women. Some of them came to our Healing Weekend. Jason, the head of our adult children support group, is also in California. And I've met so many wonderful women when I was out there a number of years ago, and so we'll be able to reunite again. So if you're interested in joining me, you can write to me at bombk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to put you on the mailing list. As the information comes forth, you'll be one of the first to know. Also, I want to remind people that we have support chat 3 times a week. 2 evenings a week, and also on Tuesday afternoon, it's our international chat for women not only in this country, but also in the United Kingdom and any other English-speaking country. We have women sometimes come from as far away as Finland, Denmark, Israel. I mean, there are women from all over the world who come to our international support chat, including women from the United States who have a hard time chatting at night, but they're available during the weekend, during the afternoon. So if you are interested and you haven't joined us yet, just send me a note at bombk@aol.com that you'd like to join the chat, and I'll send you directions. We also have our children's support group, our adult children of gay fathers, and that's every Wednesday at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It's a wonderful vehicle for your children to be able to discuss their issues with other children who can identify with exactly what's going on. So if you have an adult child, make sure to encourage him or her to join our group. You know, just drop me a note and I'll send you the information. And also my newest newsletter came out this week, actually came out last night and early this morning. And so if you're not on the newsletter list, you can always look it up on my blog at gayhusbands.com and hit into the blog. I do put it on there if you prefer not to get it in your email. But if you do want to get it, all you have to do is write to me, and I'll be happy to put you on my mailing list of over 7,222 women at this time. I just did another count. And I'm really excited because this is my 13th year finishing of doing the newsletters, and this month's message was a really important message. So if you want to see it, you can go to my blog, or else you can write to me directly, and I'll send it to you. Well, so the final announcement, next week I have a very exciting guest that many people can't wait to hear again and again and again, and that's Wendy from Houston, who has authored all of her list to help women on their healing journey, letting you know what you're going to be feeling, what to expect, how she felt during her early days of recovery. And for those of you who don't have her list, I'm happy to send it to you, but usually when you ask me for information, that's part of the information packet. And Wendy will be on here next week to discuss her healing process and go through some of the items on her list so that you can really identify with what you're going through. So those are my announcements for tonight, and now I'd like to introduce to you a very special guest who I hope will be part of our network for many years to come, and I discovered her quite by accident, but through my friend Carol in New York, who sent me a notice about her, and her name is Alexa Servadidio. I'm sorry, Alexa, I thought I would screw that up again.
That's
Alexa,
okay, it's a tough
Servadidio.
Name.
Servadidio, how's that?
That's fine, that's perfect.
Okay, you know, when you get older, it's hard to always get these things right, so I apologize. You'll learn that one day. But in the meantime, Alexa, thank you so much for being part of our show. And I'm really thrilled that I found you by accident through Carol, who sent me your information or sent you to me originally a couple months ago, when she told me that you're going to be doing your own radio show. And you had written to me to see if there's any way that I could give you a few tips about, you know, marketing it or letting people know. And I didn't know you at all, and I wasn't very helpful, I guess, but I was certainly very happy to listen to your show a couple of times now and really amazed at the depth of knowledge that you have as a therapist and working with issues that so many of our women suffer from. And I don't think you were totally familiar with our situation. Have you worked with any women before in this situation?
Not exactly, no. I've worked with a couple of, you know, I've definitely worked with people that have been homosexual or lesbian, but they were already out and they were not married. So I've worked with that, but I've not worked with exactly what you've been doing. But I think I've also been working in different areas. I do a lot of couples therapy. So I think that also comes a lot of the same issues of healing and just really realizing, you know, who you're married to, what's going on, and kind of just working forward from there.
Were you surprised to hear there's so many women in this situation?
I was very surprised. When you were saying the numbers, I was totally taken by surprise about how large spread that this issue has become, or I guess has been for a long time.
I think it's been even bigger in the past, possibly. Well, maybe there weren't that many people around in the past. But I think in the past it was so much harder to live an honestly open gay life that, you know, men just felt compelled they had to get married. It wasn't really an option because of all the stigma that was attached to it and the discrimination. And I think it's ironic that the women, you know, really do fit a prototype. Like people say, well, what kind of woman would marry a gay man? And we are pretty much all very similar as far as the prototype that a gay man looks for because, you know, gay men who marry us are really confused. A lot of them, you know, have these feelings their whole life, but they're hoping they'll go away. And they're looking for somebody who's caring and understanding and nurturing, and a lot of us are caretakers. We're always looking to fix up problems. You know, we come from our own issues. And the men are looking for someone who can be accepting. I would say the overwhelming majority of us are in the helping field. We're either doctors, nurses, teachers, mental health workers, you know, a lot of helping professions, a lot of teachers. So I don't think it's by any accident that such an overwhelming number of us are all in the helping profession because these men are looking for someone who can take care of them if things unravel and fall apart. It's just that these marriages are different than other marriages in the sense that the damage that's done is really overwhelming because you're not just talking about infidelity here. You're talking about living a lie with someone who's making you feel bad at all times that something's wrong in the marriage. And I think it's really interesting. I watched this nice little show on, I think, Tuesday nights called Nashville. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes, I have.
And they have a very similar storyline on there now with a cowboy singer who's gay and who's marrying a straight woman just to keep his cover. So you would think that in this day and age that maybe things were changing much, but I don't find them really changing. I think even though homosexuality is certainly more accepted than it was when I was growing up, there's still that social stigma. So I know you're working with a lot of clients who are out, but do you feel that they also have issues with the stigma attached to it?
Yes, I definitely do think there's been a lot of issues dealing with the stigma. I mean, it's gotten a little bit better, and you know, they are able to express themselves and you know, move forward. But I still find that there is the stigma, and there's also, you know, I think, you know, people are still uncomfortable by it. So actually, really coming out and feeling mainstream is very hard for them. And I think it's hard, I think, also moving forward, you know, maybe in the workplace or, you know, in different areas of their life to really fully be out. And I was thinking, you know, about this show and about everything about with being married to a gay man is that I think it's also two things. You're dealing, one, with the end of a marriage, and two, also the kind of a death of the dream of who you thought that person was. And I think there's two different, you know, two sides and two layers of you know, of the issue to really go through when you go through something like this and move forward, you know, towards the healing process.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really why it's so important to have you on with us. And, you know, hopefully you'll be on here many times in the future, because our women really need healing. And I think what's happening with our women is many times, you know, we have the same issues as other people going through divorce, but we have like a whole extra load of baggage to carry along with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think some of the issues revolve around the major issues around the betrayal of living with someone who wasn't honest with you. And it's not just a matter of infidelity, because in other marriages, you know, people go through all kinds of pressures and things happen. I'm certainly not defending it, but it's a different kind of infidelity. It could be a one-time thing, and a man can feel very sorry for what he did or feel guilty. You know, life, you know, can be rebuilt in many cases. But in this particular instance, it's not about just the infidelity. It's about living with someone who could never be into you as a woman and who kind of strips you away along his way of making you feel bad about yourself and never telling you the reason why. So
yes,
it's like having a puzzle and not having the missing piece to explain everything to you. So a lot of women are left in a state of confusion. They're left in a state of, you know, because they don't even know what the problem is. And some of them end up with sexually transmitted diseases. I would say about 20% of our women have STDs of every kind, mm-hmm. including HIV, AIDS, syphilis, gonorrhea, herpes. And their husbands still won't admit it. So, you know, they're left devastated. And so it's not just an infidelity issue. It's about who you are and lying about it every day. And then you start wondering the perception of your whole marriage, what was real and what wasn't real. So there's a lot of that going on. So how do you, you know, and there's never a quick fix, I don't think, to healing. But maybe you can get some good advice on ways to heal.
Yes, I mean, I definitely agree there's not a quick fix to healing. There also isn't, you know, an exact process, an exact procedure. And I think each person's case is so different. That's what I see with my
mm-hmm.
clients. Even though it could be a similar situation, the way a person heals, the way a person kind of reacts to what is going on is really going to decide, you know, where the healing process is going. And I think it's really being aware also of the twofold, as I said, is one, you know, the ideal of who you thought this person was. And I think when, you know, everyone goes into, hopefully into marriage with good intentions and they want to be who they want to be. And I think it's so frightening sometimes and really shakes the person to a core when the basic foundation of what they were planning for their wedding, for their marriage, for death to us part was kind of, you know, maybe not intentionally, but was sort of not based on truth and honesty from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that a lot
exactly.
of people then start questioning, was this person ever honest? Was this person ever in love with me? And they kind of go back like anyone, even in a straight marriage or where there was infidelity with couples, they go back
mm-hmm.
and start going through every, you know, every incident. Maybe I should have saw this, or maybe why didn't I do this? I probably could have, you know, found out earlier if I checked this. And I think it's really going back and kind of, it's almost like torturing yourself, trying to relive every moment. If you could have figured this out, if you're not, instead of, you know, just saying, okay, it, not that it is what it is, but how can you move forward? And that it's something that you had no control over, which I think is very frightening for a lot of people, that, you know,
mm-hmm.
you don't have any control. And I think sometimes the idea that, you know, this is who this person is and this is what they choose to be, and letting go and accepting it, that this, you know, this is what's going on, I think is really hard for a lot of people in this position.
It is. And I think that also what's really difficult is that a lot of times women really didn't know. Even when they find out, they can't believe it. And they go into a sense of deep denial because they don't want to have to deal with it. Because I think, if anything, it's a matter that when you hear the word gay, that's kind of like a death sentence to your marriage. And you're looking to think about anything else, like people use fancy words like bisexual, by curious. You know, they're trying to avoid the inevitable, because once somebody finds out their husband's gay, I mean, the reality is, how good of a marriage can you really have? So there's so many different issues that we deal with, like the social stigma. How's it going to affect our children? You know, how are their friends going to view them? You know, how can we tell our families? And women, a lot of times, they internalize the problems. Now, I think that happens in a straight marriage also, but we feel like maybe if we had been better wives, maybe this would have changed. Or people say, well, they weren't gay when they married you, obviously. You have children with them. What did you do to make them gay? You know, society still doesn't understand it has nothing to do with us. But we do look a lot for what red flags did we miss. And sometimes, you know, we did miss them in retrospect. But, you know, when you're young and you don't understand homosexuality, your husband didn't understand it, or he wouldn't have married you, hopefully. You know, he was suffering within himself or questioning himself. So how do you first get past blaming yourself? That's one of the key things that women really do here.
It takes time. But I think it's also being really aware of, I do a lot with my clients. Sometimes we have this inner monologue that we have in our head. It could be a positive monologue. It could be a negative one from childhood. And it sort of runs, you know, subconsciously. Sometimes we're aware of it. Sometimes we're not. So I think it's really becoming aware, especially when something like this traumatic happens, because I see this as trauma. You know, really trauma when this happens, to really start being aware of what that inner monologue is and catch yourself doing it and try to start putting more positive thoughts. It takes a while to do, but kind of using more positive affirmations and really trying not to be so judgmental on yourself, saying, you know, I could have done this better, I could have done that. And it takes, I think that's why the process takes, a while. It's really letting go of it. And I think other than a regular, you know, marriage or relationship, it's got that twofold, of what's going on and moving forward and really being able to explore that to figure out what, you know, how do you feel about it, how you can kind of mourn the loss. You know, I find it a lot like a grieving process, the five stages of grief, and they go in different orders. Each person grieves differently. So, I mean, there could be denial, there can be acceptance, there can be depression, and there can be bargaining. And I find a lot of people bargain, well, if I just, you know, go to the gym a little bit more and not eat as much, maybe he'll find me more attractive and he'll change. And I think that's what a lot of people get caught doing. If only I do this, then maybe this can happen. And I think really watching, you know, what's going on with that and being really aware of how, you know, how you're really grieving it and allowing yourself grieving it.
So I tell women, you know, I describe this process also as the grieving process, you know, similar to the death process of grieving. And I tell women a lot of times you're going to pass through a point and then go back. I mean, because there's so many issues when you get divorced that sometimes you think you're past the anger issue and into the acceptance issue, and then something terrible happens, and you're back to where you start, and you have to go through it again. There's just no quick fix, but I really appreciate your saying that there's not a time limit or any set cookie-cutter formula to grieving, because I think that a lot of our women face that with their families, like they're saying, well, aren't you over this yet? You know, and what's taking you so long? And a lot of times we have so many complexities, you know, the women's loss of self-esteem, sexual esteem, when you've been told day in and day out for years and years that you're worthless, that there's something wrong with you, that just rebuilding all of that takes time, wouldn't you say so?
Yes, and I think then that puts on kind of a third layer. If there was emotional abuse, mental abuse, that is another layer of having to deal with that and the manipulation and I call it the brainwashing and really rebuilding your self-confidence and the self-doubt of what's going on. And a lot of that, you know, one of my specialties is domestic violence. And a lot of they have the domestic violence wheels. And it has a lot, you know, of manipulation, put-downs, isolation. So it takes a while to really, because it almost – you start doubting yourself, and then you start losing confidence in yourself. So then anything anybody tells you, you start believing that that's the truth and that's your reality. And then you give up, or kind of give up hope and not move forward and trust in yourself that, you know what, I am making the right decision. I'm not crazy. It's not, nothing, you know, this is what's going on. And I think really when you start feeling like you're in those type of situations, a red flag should be coming up. And I think it's time, you know, to maybe go see a therapist or talk to someone really and kind of, you know, have a soundboard to kind of bounce things off of and say, this is what's going on.
And I really love what you have to say, and that's another point I want to bring out. You know, sometimes having a therapist can make a little difference in your recovery. And if you have a great therapist who can really work with you through this, and we have several great therapists in our network, and that's why I'm so glad to have met you, Alexa. So I think you'll do wonderful things with our women.
Thank you.
But, you know, sometimes just having that springboard of having the right direction, you know, getting rid of some of those false perceptions that you've been in for so many years and having somebody else look at it from a more objective point of view can really help your recovery. I would just like to get your opinion on this because I feel really strongly, and sometimes it's hard for women to see it because they're so deep in the hole there. I really feel that I know it's hard to leave a marriage when you have children, but my point of view is that, you know, it's better to, like Dr. Phil uses this saying a lot, better to come from a broken home than be in a broken home. And I feel that our children's future really does depend on how we role model it for them. And if they see that we're willing to stay in a marriage where there's a lack of emotion, love, you know, affection, tenderness, emotional connections, caring, that they're going to somehow find themselves very often back in that same kind of marriage. And I think it's really abusive for the children to stay where there's a lot of fighting and arguing and crying and bad things going on. I think they have a better chance of growing up in a healthier environment if, you know, they're not in that environment. How do you feel about it?
You know, I find that a lot of couples that I see where there is a lot of fighting, a lot of, you know, arguing going on in front of the children, is so, especially the children that have different developmental stages, you know, of attachment and of starting to trust. And I think when it's not a stability or a consistency going on, it can really impact the core of the child growing up with their trust issues, their attachment issues. You know, one person might be all right, you know, seeing someone that you can not totally agree with, someone that doesn't make them all good, that doesn't make them all bad. And I think also a sense of security. So I think when there's a lot of fighting and there's a lot of screaming, there's so much instability and chaos going on that it becomes very damaging to the children. If the parents can speak to the child, or if they can have, you know, kind of an understanding in an open, safe environment where they can, you know, discuss things at, you know, age-appropriate levels. But if it's just, you know, chaos and fighting and screaming, I really find that it does have a lot of damage on the children. And I see a lot of children, I see a lot of grown-ups who were children in different types of abusive households where there was a lot of chaos and a lot of fighting. And it really has impacted their way of dealing in their own personal relationships, at work, just trusting and attachment. And some people become too attached, and some people can kind of cut off really easy and learn, you know, it's just, you know, kind of be cold, don't get too close, and you kind of cut off relationships and friendships pretty quickly. Each person is so different. I find that two kids can grow up in the same house, and the way they'll react and the way they will grow up can be totally different.
I think what
you said
is really so important.
I
mean, about what you were just saying about the developmental age, that could really impact a child, right?
Yes. It really, you know, and their understanding of what's going on. And a lot of times, children, no matter what, blame themselves. They take personal responsibility. They, you know, they do the bargaining. If maybe I cleaned up my toys, mommy and daddy wouldn't be fighting so much. Maybe if I was, you know, a better student, this wouldn't happen. And I think people think, oh, they're kids, they should know it's the parents fighting. They don't. They really internalize that. And I think that's what becomes so damaging, is, you know, they believe it's something they've done, that they're bad, that this is their problem. If they weren't here, maybe this wouldn't happen. And I think people think even if the children are young, they don't understand. They do. They understand in some sort of level, and it does, moving forward, really, you know, start showing up in different areas of the child's life.
And I agree with you so much, because as I tell people, when I was younger and growing up, I came from a broken family. And my parents, you know, divorced at one point, or they separated at one point when I was 9 years old. Then they went back for another wonderful 7 or 8 more torturous years. But sometimes when parents are fighting, you know, when there's nothing left to fight about, they have to bring up the children, because then they're always questioning each other's ability for raising children and child-caring ways, because they've run out of other things to argue. So I remember that I used to stay up late at night and listen to my parents argue about us, you know, my brother and I. And I used to think, oh, my God, you know, why are we making them so unhappy? So I also felt that extra strain of guilt on me for doing something not right that my parents had to be fighting. And It's interesting that I have 3 younger sisters who grew up when my parents split up, and they were much more, you know, much better adjusted than I and my brother were, because, you know, we grew up with all that chaos, and at least they grew up, you know, without that fighting constantly going on, and it really made a difference in their mental health.
Yes, I find that.
So I know it's hard. I think a lot of times women are afraid to make a move because they don't have the strength to do it, and they feel, I've heard so much from women, well, I'm staying because it's so important to not break up the family unit. But I think a lot of times, you know, women don't understand, or maybe they're afraid to break it up because they themselves don't have the strength to stand up because they've been so far beaten down. They don't think they can make it on their own.
Mm-hmm. And it's also that hope, wishful thinking, maybe one day it will change. And it's great to have to hope and to move forward to think that, but I think it's also really being able to do a reality check and really say what is the reality, and what is, you know, what is this just denial? And I understand leaving a marriage, especially with children, is very hard, even under if there is best circumstances, but better circumstances is a tough break, and that's also a grieving process too. And I can imagine under some circumstances like this, It's so hard, and as you said before, the stigma. I mean, it's hard enough to tell people, you know, I'm getting a divorce, and then having to go into this whole other area must be so hard, and especially, you know, people don't really talk about it, that it's such, you know, it's almost, I feel that the woman would feel defensive. As you said, some people said, you know, how didn't you know? Obviously, he wasn't gay when he married June. I think that's really a tough thing to have to take at any time. Yeah, when you're going through a divorce. And I think really that's why the support system, what you're doing, is amazing. And having support groups and having a therapist and being able to let that, you know, speak to someone else about it, because you sometimes when you carry all of that with you, it's too heavy. I always say therapist, you know, coming to see a therapist, is you're carrying around this huge suitcase with everything you've ever had in your life, and it's really hard for you to carry. So when you come into my office, you'll leave a sock, or you'll leave, you know, a shirt or a pair. So as you leave, your bags are becoming a little bit lighter, a little bit lighter, a little bit lighter. So then it's something you can carry. And I think a lot of people think, you know, I should be able to do this on my own. I don't want to tell anybody. I don't want to get anybody involved. I can do this. And it doesn't mean you're weak or that something's wrong with you, that you can't do it on your own. It's very hard. And I think it's very important to have a support system in place. It doesn't mean that you're defeated.
Well, I just had an email from one of our listeners right now. Her name is Carol, and she's in Central Illinois. She said, please ask Alexa if it's possible to suffer from post-traumatic stress from this kind of a marriage.
I'm thinking if there was a lot of emotional abuse, mental abuse,
there usually is.
Then I say yes. And I know, I think that's the difference. Some people think that in order to post-traumatic stress, there has to be, you know, physical abuse and domestic violence. Yes, that has PTSD too. But I find I have a lot of clients who've had emotional abuse, mental abuse, and have PTSD from that. And I think then, you know, one of the things, you become so vigilant and things are easily triggering you, and you kind of go back to that same point in time in your life where that event occurred. And yes, I think it's very possible that that could definitely be something that could happen.
Because most of these marriages are on some level emotionally abusive. Many of the men that women marry in this situation are very narcissistic. And that's certainly not a reflection on gay people as a whole, but it may be a reflection on gay men who get married because, you know, it's cut from a different cloth there. And a lot of them are, you know, like I say, living their lie on a daily basis, which I truly believe in my heart can create sociopathic behavior when you're lying every day of your life. That lying becomes kind of inherent in your personality. You just lie to lie. We see this all the time. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times there is a lot of emotional abuse because these men are so controlling because they're afraid if they let go of their control, then their secret's going to be out. So often they will isolate you from your family, your friends, they'll move you around and around. You know, they keep tight control over you. And women really get knocked down from these marriages. And it's funny, you know, I was a very strong woman when I married my gay husband. I was really a strong woman. I was leading a strong movement. I was traveling all over, you know, I was in my late 20s, I wanted to marry someone who was stronger than I was, so I made that mistake and married someone who was stronger than me, but he was a bully, but I didn't recognize it. And, you know, when you live with someone who's a bully, you know, I would say he would shout me down to shut me up so mm-hmm. that I wouldn't have anything left to say. And I think that happens with so many of our women. So we do become someone who we don't even know who we are anymore. And that's happened to me. And, you know, I forgot who I was. You know, because you just don't want to have constant conflict in your home, so you just give in.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say that could create post-traumatic stress?
Definitely. I think so, definitely. And I think also what a hard way of when you do decide, you know, I can't live like this anymore, when you don't even know who you are anymore, to move forward is such, I mean, it's a huge step. It's healthy, but I can see how scary a step that is. It's a step of the unknown. It's taking, you know, taking it out on your, you know, that step out on your own and really moving forward. And I think sometimes change, even in a positive way, is scarier. Sometimes people feel that it's better, easier if they stay with what they know, even though it's not bad, not healthy, but at least they know the outcome and they know what to expect, even if it can be dangerous, it can be abusive, but at least they mm-hmm. have some sort of control over it. And I think that it gets a little frightening sometimes when people, you know, they're going to leave the marriage or they're going to say, this is what I'm going to do on my own. But I tell a lot of my clients, once you make that decision, yes, the anticipation is very, you know, nervous and frustrating. But I think when you're taking a step in a healthy direction for yourself and you're setting boundaries and saying, you know, this is what I deserve, this is what I demand to be treated, that you put that out there and then you start making healthier choices.
What happens in cases where there is domestic violence? Because we do have some of those as well. Not the majority, but some.
I find a lot that there is the PTSD, and then that it's also, you know, also that when you do leave, it's very frightening, especially if the man is, you know, coming after you, following you.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of women who've had to go into shelters,
mm-hmm.
you know, with their children, and, you know, what I tell my clients when they're, you know, I see some women that are still in an abusive relationship. As a therapist, I don't tell people they should leave. I don't tell people they should stay. I explore their options. So a lot of the women that, you know, that are still remaining at home for safety reasons, financial reasons, or just not ready
mm-hmm.
to leave yet, I make a safety plan with them. Make sure you are getting your birth certificate, special documents that you're going to need, bank statements. Start, if you have some time, start collecting things. Maybe open a bank account, you know, at another bank if you can, putting money aside. So you have some sort of plan and some sort of security moving
mm-hmm.
forward. And I find that helps, you know, with some of the pain. It helps a little bit if they have a little bit of a plan, you know, maybe reaching out to some people, talking about, you know, this is what I'm planning on doing in a couple of months. And it's a scary situation. It's domestic violence. And I think it can be
mm-hmm.
very, very obviously dangerous. Mm-hmm. So it's being very careful of the way you move forward with that.
No, because I think that is so dangerous. I have another show about authors, you know, because I belong to another group where I have a book co-op. And one of my authors wrote a book, and she was on the show last week. And it was so scary because her sister lived with a man who had tremendous propensity for domestic violence, and he controlled every move she made. I mean, she couldn't even talk to people if he didn't want her to talk. And he had her at her sister's house, and she was talking to him about something. He told her, shut up. And she didn't shut up. And he took a gun, and he shot her 6 times in the face and killed
her.
And, you know, her family was so isolated from her, you know, he would barely let her talk to him. I mean, situations like that, I can see how women can get so fearful, you know, that if they do anything wrong, that their life is at stake and their children's lives are at stake. You know, it really scares me when I get women in that situation, you know, who need help. Because, you know, it is very frightening. And you can say, well, go to the law and get a protection order. But when a man wants to get you, that's not going to really help you.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it's a very tough situation for a lot of women. I think women are more economically tied down, where it's hard for them to think about supporting a whole family when they don't have the skills or a job.
Yes.
And so many of them say that they were there being, you know, raising the family so their husbands could go to school. And now they have the upper hand as far as the financial issues. Do you find that to be a problem in a lot of marriages, too?
Yes, I definitely do. And I think, you know, the roles are very defined. The woman is staying home. This is what she's doing. And the husband has all the control over the money. So for the woman to actually go out and, you know, start looking for a job, or even the idea of leaving the home and having to support this on her own, is a very, you know, unknown feeling for her. And, you know, I think also a lot of, you know, shelters and different places can assist you, which I think there's definitely resources out there. But it's very frightening. I think it's also hard, to really accept the reality of what's going on. I find a lot of people in these relationships are in denial or even scared to talk about it, because it's something it's hard to bring up to a friend. Say, hey, I think I'm being abused. And that's also the stigma on that, too. But I think it's definitely, when there's domestic violence involved, it's really, you know, I always say safety first, and make sure you have a safety plan in place.
You're absolutely right. One of the things that, you know, I'm doing this year, and I have a number of my support group members who are going to be helping me with this, is that we're going to be advocating for some of the divorce laws to change. And I know that state by state it's very different, you know, and most states today are all no-fault divorce states. But I think that women feel very victimized sometimes by having a no-fault divorce state when they really have been victims, and that the courts don't really support us in many ways. And this is one of the issues that I'll be taking up this year, is having a his-fault divorce, when really the divorce had nothing to do with you, like in the case where you have a gay husband. You had no sense of that or no knowledge of it. And now he's leaving the marriage because he's gay. So you're left holding the bag here and now having to reroute your whole life after already being emotionally taken down. And now so many of our women end up spending thousands of dollars on a divorce that had nothing to do with them. And we're going to be looking for some allies in this from domestic violence. Like, why should women have to pay for that divorce when they're being beaten? You know, some of the laws, I think, are really unfair. Do you find that?
Yes, and I find a lot of the laws, and then going into these courts, are victimizing the people, the clients again. Going in there and having, you know, your whole history in your face and everything you've ever done, you know, under a microscope, and really having to defend every move you make, is traumatizing, is re-traumatizing the client. I think, especially when there's domestic violence involved, I think there should, you know, be definitely different training, which I find is starting to happen. I'm finding that there's the awareness of domestic violence and training, you know, our policemen, training, you know, workers, hospital workers, that it is a different a different way of speaking to people, even if the victim's a man or if the victim is a woman, because I've worked with a lot of men that have been the victim, and they're frightened to go to the police because they're scared people are going to laugh at them and say, well, you're bigger than her. Come on. And I think that's where I think really educating people, size doesn't matter. This doesn't matter. It's about emotional abuse. It's about, you know, what's right and wrong, and not that, you know, this is how it has to be, but just being able to kind of take it for what it is and not put somebody on the defensive and not have them have to, you know, be judged and have more of a safer environment for them to come out and say what's going on.
I think that's so true, that, you know, people just don't understand domestic violence any better than they understand this situation. And a lot of similarities, because women, you know, kind of go into a closet like our women do too, because they're afraid of what people will say. Well, how would you let somebody hit you? You must have, you know, liked it, or you must have known. Why'd you stay so long? You know, the same kind of questions. And, you know, when I was younger, I used to make those same questions, you know, or think those same things. Well, you see he's hitting you, why can't you just leave? You know, before I learned more about it, of course, before I got into counseling, I used to say the same thing. You know, why is it so hard for her to walk out a door, not understanding how tied in you do feel? And sometimes it's not just about you, but it's also about your children and the threats. You know, I'm going to take your children and run. You know, because I know a lot of women get that also. You know, so they're just paralyzed into doing nothing. So I know it's a very sad situation. And I think it's really very prevalent all over the world. In some cultures, it's like a cultural norm. Do you ever find that?
Yes. There are a lot of cultures I find that, you know, the man is the head, he can be a little bit more aggressive, that, you know, a woman has to have her place. And and the whole, you know, the set roles, I think, have been changing so much through life and through what's going on, that I think that's a lot of the problems. I think people are feeling inferior and just having different, you know, not sure what their identity is. And I find a lot of that's what, you know, going on in marriages. You know, maybe the woman is making more money now or has a higher job, and it's kind of threatening for the man. And it becomes, you know, a power struggle. And that's when a lot of, you know, this conflict arises. And I think that's why also couples counseling is something that's really, really important to go when there's conflict, or even when there's not even conflict. I find that, you know, just for communication. And it's been interesting. I found with couples that there's usually, you have this dance that you kind of do, that each one's a pursuer sometimes and one's the distancer, and you kind of go back and forth, and it's really finding out what does that serve for both of you. Obviously there's something going on that's kind of serving that, and also finding what are you trying to reenact. Is it something from your childhood with your own parents? Is it something else going on? But I think being really aware of reenactments and what's going on in that, and communication can really, you know, bring up awareness on where the marriage is.
Lex, I would like to ask your opinion about this also, because this is my feeling, but I believe that when you come from a broken marriage, you know, such as ours, but pretty much any broken marriage where there's been any kind of emotional abuse, where you've been really made to feel less than good about yourself, that you really need to take time to build yourself up before you jump into another relationship. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I totally agree with that. And, you know, I understand sometimes a lot of people say, oh, it's better just get your feet wet, go jump right back in, you'll get over it. But it's not. I think even when there's a relationship that ends on whatever good terms could be, you need to heal. I think, again, you need to mourn what that is, and then you need to kind of take time to yourself and regroup and really figure out what's going on. I mean, there's obviously feelings, you know, of sadness, of loss. I think especially when there's abuse, there's other things going on, even if you're not aware of it, or you said, oh, you know, it's okay, it doesn't really bother me. There is something there. It's something that needs to be addressed. I think sometimes when we jump into the next relationship, it's kind of putting a Band-Aid on it, and you're just going to move forward, and maybe this person will be totally different from the last person you were with. But it's, again, watching for those reenactments of what's going on. I think you need time to heal. You need time to take time to yourself, rebuild, get your confidence back up, and just, you know, time to be alone. I think that's another, you know, thing that I find a lot of times. It's hard for people to be alone and just to sit with themselves and be aware of what they're feeling. Yes, it's not going to feel good all the time, but I don't think that's life, that you're feeling happy 24 hours a day, but being able to kind of sit with the sad times and say this will pass. But you have to, you know, as well as the good times, you have to also sit with the bad times and make sure you're not going into that relationship to fill the void that you're feeling or the void that was from your past relationship, because that, you know, you keep just filling void after void. I think someone else is not going to fill that void. That has to come from you. And there's also not a time limit on it. And it's frightening
to
some people to figure out.
You have to learn to love yourself first. You know,
yeah.
If you don't learn to love yourself first, then you're not going to be able to have a healthy relationship next. You know, once again, you're going to put yourself in a position where you're with someone who's taking advantage of you, thinking that it'll work, you can fix it, it will get better. If you love him enough, he'll change. And I think it's so much easier to think you can change someone else than take a look at yourself and say, you know, I have to change. I have to get stronger. I have to get better. And if you don't love yourself first, then you can never truly love somebody else. I really believe that. And I don't mean in a selfish kind of way, but at least feel good about yourself, that you can learn to assert yourself and say things. You know, one of the problems in our marriages, you know, as a group, is always communication. Because we feel that if we say the wrong things, our husbands will love us even less than they're loving us at the moment, not realizing what the problem is. And so we've learned how to not communicate, how to, you know, mute ourselves so we don't ask for what we want or we never assert ourselves. And I think until you learn how to ask for what you want in a relationship, you don't have to make demands, but at least communicate what's going wrong. That seems to be our biggest problem now. Is that something you work with your clients on?
Yes, because I find the more you keep accepting less than what you're worth, you start bringing your self-worth down and down and down. And that's, I mean, that's hard for any person to do. You might say, oh, it doesn't bother me. But you keep accepting less and less than what you deserve. And your gut says, I think I deserve more than this. And I think there's a difference between selfishness and self-interest. And a lot of people get confused. But you really have to have self-interest and you know, self-preservation of yourself and what you deserve. And if you have children, that's even another thing, letting your children see that humans deserve, you deserve to be treated like this. These people deserve to be happy and to have these things. I think sometimes when you do things out of fear, when you do things out of chaos or desperation, that's when the choices you make aren't always the healthiest for you, because you're just doing it, you know, you're not coming from a peaceful place. That's like when you're in an argument and you're screaming and yelling in the middle of a heated argument, that's not the time to start discussing, okay, what should we do? I think I always tell people, take some time apart, wait till you're more at a calmer place, and then come back so you can be more rational about your decisions instead of just doing out of impulse or out of anger or out of fear. And then you sell yourself short when you do that.
Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to ask your opinion on, that a lot of times, I always tell women that you have a right to be angry. You have to go through your grieving process. You know, it's residual scarring you're going to have for a while. But, you know, there comes a point where some women get so stuck on the anger that it slides into bitterness. And they just can't get past that point. And I think that's really a problem, where they need to get a therapist to really work with them. You know, when you get to that point where you have to be angry every day and hurt every day. And do you have any suggestions on how to move from one space to the next on that?
Yes, I find also with the anger, journaling I find is really a great way to kind of keep a little track of what your feelings are, especially when you're really, really angry. And it doesn't mean you have to write down sentences or all this, kind of writing down points. And, you know, when you're angry, when it first starts, when you're angry, when it ends, what happened before it, and then going back and looking at it. Because when we're in the midst of these kind of fits and angry outbursts, we're not really being aware of what's going on. So when you can come back to it and say, okay, this is what really triggered this, I do this a lot with anxiety because I find anxiety, anger, and depression are all connected, and they kind of go in a circle around in different ways. So usually, you know, something is coming up in this area of your life and that. And like with anxiety, if you don't address it right away, it'll start going into every area of your life. It'll pop up everywhere. And I think with anger, it does the same thing. So I think it's really journaling, writing down, and letting yourself be angry. But I think when it's finding that it's really hindering your quality of life, that's the time to sit back and say, you know, what is it that's really angering you? What are some ways to kind of really talk about it? And I know it's hard to kind of sit with that and explore it and mourn it and just be with it. But I think if the more you push it off and just kind of use anger as your defense, it just builds and builds and builds. And sometimes I find that women do it, people do it as a protection. So then no one will come near me because now I'm just angry and I'll get them before anyone hurts me. I'll be really, really strong so no one will do that again. But it's, again, it's really sabotaging yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taking some time being aware with that.
And, you know, once again, you have to go into this realizing that everything's a process. And you are going to be angry, and you are going to be hurt, but that's part of any great loss in your life. I always say there's no limit on grieving. You know, grieving can go on for a long time, but that anger, you have to work through it, and if you don't, then it's only going to hurt you. You know, one of the things that, you know, we talk about in our group a lot is the whole concept of forgiveness, and I know that, you know, it's very controversial because, you know, I'm not a big believer in forgiveness without, you know, deserving the forgiveness. I'm more of like a person who believes in acceptance of a situation. If you can come to accept it and then, you know, mourn it, grieve it, and move on from it. And I don't feel like I have to give blind, you know, forgiveness to someone who's done something terrible to me who doesn't deserve it, because that would only make me feel more like a victim. But I say that some people feel that need to give forgiveness, and that's fine if that works for you. But I think the goal has to be to get past the anger, you know, and that's not to say you won't be angry again, because when you're raising children and you're co-parenting, you know, you still have kids to worry about. You know, there's going to be times when you get angry for sure, but it's not going to be a constant state. But how do you feel about, you know, forgiveness as it applies to healing?
I find the more that you hold on to it, I mean, forgiveness, I think, has so many different meanings. It doesn't mean, you know, giving the person a free pass and people can treat you any way they want to, and then you just allow them, because then that becomes enabling. You're enabling this person to treat you bad, to treat others bad. I think people have to be held responsible for their behaviors. But trying to right the wrong for the rest of your life, or making sure that person is punished or knows what they did, is really hurting yourself. I mean, you can, you know, say, this is it, I'm going to make peace with what is going on, and there might not be closure. There's not the answer you needed or the way it ended how it should be. But I think doing it for yourself, not thinking of forgiveness for the other person, but really thinking of it, it's a way of kind of letting go. Yes, it doesn't mean you're going to, you know, this person's going to be your best friend and you totally forgive them again. But I think it's saying that my life is more important than to live the rest of my life hating you, because when you're doing that, it just puts a different view on your life and a different type of I find like almost like a darkness, and there's this underlying loom or doom that's underneath you, and it's hard to let that go because you always have that anger or that betrayal. So I think acknowledging it and saying, no, it's not that this person has a free pass, but I'm going to let this go so I can move forward and I can have the life that I deserve. And I think for each person, again, it's different what that means. Doesn't mean you have to, you know, talk to this person or tell them that you forgive them, but just saying, I'm going to make a conscious choice to take a step back and to live and at peace, kind of finding the peace within the chaos. I find that's what's really important, is finding the peace within the chaos and moving forward. And hopefully through time, you'll be healing in your own way, so then you can be back to a healthier you.
Right, and maybe even it means in some cases, now I'm thinking that as you're talking, to forgive yourself. You made a mistake. You know, you got into a bad situation. You stayed longer than you should have. You know, there's a lot of things, shoulda, coulda, woulda, but forgiving yourself for that. Because I always tell women, we do what we need to do at the time that we do it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all different kinds of reasons. We have all kinds of things in life that go on, and we make bad decisions sometimes based on what our needs are at that particular moment. And we have to forgive ourselves for that, too. I think forgiving yourself is number one.
Yes,
that
definitely.
That might help, right?
Yes, I think that's definitely number one.
So I have a note here from my friend Annie, who was in our chat room tonight and was anxious to hear you, and she just sent me a note. Hi, Bonnie. Please tell Alexa thanks for me. I'm so encouraged listening to her. You're both answering my questions. I want to thank you both. Bonnie, the healing process is so new for me. Tonight is really awesome. So I want to let you know that you've really helped someone right away, Alexa.
Oh, well, thank you. So happy.
That brings me to my next point. And thank you, Annie, for bringing that, sending us that note. Alexa is available for counseling, even if you don't live in Westchester, New York, because thanks to the modern world of conveniences, you also do phone counseling, right?
Yes.
And you do Skype counseling?
Yes, I'm starting to look into that with all the different laws with NASW and insurance, but that's definitely something that's coming up on the horizon.
Okay, but in the meantime, you do in-person counseling and phone counseling.
Yes.
And also Alexa, you know, is able to take, you know, all kinds of different insurances because that's so much an issue for a lot of our women. So I'm really thrilled that you can do that, too.
Yes, and I do self-pay, too.
Okay, great. I'd like to let women know a little bit about your radio show. So can you talk a little bit about that and give them the information for that?
Sure. My radio show is called Insight into Healing. It's on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's on the Internet. It's at WLOR.net. There's also a chat room there, too, so I can interact with you during the show on the chat room. There are also, if you need to write in questions, you can send questions to insightintohealing@gmail.com. And there's also a Facebook page, Insight into Healing, so you can like the page or private message me. Again, all names are confidential, so if you do give me a question, I will not put anybody's name. And I answer each question on the show. I have a guest host that comes on. Everything from anxiety, depression, domestic violence. Our next show this Wednesday is bullying, and I have a huge anti-bullying group organization that's coming on that does just amazing work for children, teens, adults, all types of bullying, relationships in school. So it's really, really interesting, and I really love to get the community involved and being able to provide them with educational tools to grow and for personal healing.
Well, I just think you're wonderful. I just went to your Facebook page, and I clicked like.
And oh, thank you.
Can I do it more than once?
I think
can
it's
I like
just
you
one.
Like every day?
You
I don't
can
know
try,
how that
yes.
Works. Oh, okay, great. Yeah, because I am just so overly impressed with you. I just feel it's a blessing that you came our way. So, as Alexa mentioned, if you go to Facebook, because we have our own private Facebook page in there that I'll talk to you about later. So maybe you could join us also. But Insight into Healing. That's on Facebook, and you can click the like and also see some of the upcoming broadcasts that you'll see on there from Alexa, and also see when her show is on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the station, anybody can get it anywhere on the computer, right?
Yes.
Okay,
just
and
type
it's
in
WLOR.net. You'll see Alexa there. And I'm just so excited, Alexa, that you joined us. And I want to thank you tremendously for doing such a beautiful job on helping our women and even this short amount of time, and hope that you'll be part of our ongoing campaign of healing, because that's what you're about also.
Yes, I would love to.
Thank you so much. And, you know, in a couple of weeks, my website's updated. You'll be able to find Alexa's information up there on the right-hand side for my links for help. And I'll make an announcement in our next newsletter. And, Alexa, I want to thank you so much. I hope you'll become a kind of semi-regular guest. I don't like to put on too much imposition on your time, but we certainly would like to have you back here as much as you can join us.
Yes, I'd love to come back. Thank you. And thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's been such a pleasure. So everyone, I want to say goodnight to you. Have a wonderful week. I know I'm feeling a lot better just by listening to Alexa, and I know that many of you are too. All right, Alexa, thanks so much, and goodnight to all our listeners. Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone. Good night.